Welcome back to Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension. We will now resume our conversation with Dr. Trey Patterson from the Padlock Ranch in Ranchester, Wyoming. Kiernan ended the last episode with asking Trey about how they manage their heifers and young females with their resources on the ranch. So let's continue listening.
And, you know, maybe this is a great time to transition back to the female side of things a little bit. And maybe you can tie some of that together with how you guys thinking about how things are going to have to be managed down the road in terms of forage availability in your forage base, how you guys make the decision to allocate some of that to your heifers and how that frees you up to take care of some of those younger cows, perhaps that are going to need some more feed resources as they go through the winter.
Yeah, I think one thing that we want to look at in these production systems, kind of going back to where we started with our conversation today about turnover rates and having replacement cows. And, you know, we started with the value of those coming out, but what about the cost of those going in? Remember the metric I said we looked at was value of cull cows over what it cost us to put a replacement into the herd as a bred heifer. And so obviously you can work on both sides of that equation, and depreciation costs, depending on, you know, ranches sometimes look at, you know, more cash accounting where you're paying for all those costs up front. In our system, in accrual accounting, where, you know, those cows get capitalized and they're depreciated over a 5-year period of time. Either way you look at it, that's a huge cost. Depreciation costs of that cow herd, that reduction in value over time. Versus what is a big deal, and it's something that we have to manage. And on the replacement heifer side, you know, I think one of the concepts that we've really ascribed to is we want to look at on the replacement heifer, so bred with her first calf, is we want to look at optimal breeding rates, not necessarily maximum. And if your heifer development costs are low enough, an open heifer can still be profitable. It's like a yearling. And so but if your costs are high, then that pregnancy rate becomes more critical to you. One of the things that we have used some in the past, and I'll quantify that a little bit more in just a minute, but is range developing heifers. And one of the concepts with that is, okay, if we're going to ask these cows to go out and be good range cows, doesn't it make sense to start young on those and maybe even put some selection pressure on those heifers when they're young to be able to do that? I don't know how much selection pressure we put on them, because those heifers do really, really well out on grass in the wintertime in Montana and, you know, in fairly rough environments. And we're supposed to be 15 below tonight. We get pretty tough out here too, like you guys do, but they do pretty darn well. And I think sometimes they do better than young cows do grazing out. And so if we can build a lower cost replacement heifer by running them on grass, and then just realize we may have to allocate some of that savings back into taking care of the young cow once they're bred, because I think once they enter your herd as a bred cow, then the loss of them is expensive, because you haven't captured back that value yet, depending on your marketing program to some degree, as we talked about earlier. But can you see in my conversation how everything's interrelated and how you have to think about it that way? We've had a lot of success when we've done that, is running calves out on grass in the wintertime with just modest protein supplementation. They do well. And in our system, where we're not breeding them until July, we have seen no reduction in pregnancy rate as a yearling. Those calves are about 150 pounds lighter, 150, 160 pounds lighter than the cows that were developed in the feedlot, you know, on a silage ration, kind of a typical heifer development ration. They're lighter, but their gains in May and June of the year are over a pound a day better, and they'll compensate more than half of that weight differential during that time of the year. They're still a little lighter at breeding, but they've still got bred. One of the things we looked at is in my hypothesis was that that we would have more of those cows in the herd, you know, out at 5 years, 6 years of age, 5 years after that, because we've built a, you know, a better cow by, you know, kind of training them early. Our data showed that it was actually the retention of the cows was the same. So we didn't herd it, didn't quite fulfill my hypothesis in our system that it was going to be necessarily better. And so that, you know, that kind of comes back to a really important systems question then is if we can run heifers on grass and do that cheaper, and if we can still get the reproduction that we desire, why not do that all the time? Well, grass isn't free. And so that there's a cost to that. Either I am replacing some cows and actually reducing the number of cows on the ranch to make room for those heifers to graze all winter long, or I may be feeding some cows in place of running those heifers out on grass, or I'm leasing pasture or whatever. And so looking at those costs and the differences become important in making those decisions, because we do know that turnover is important to profitability. In other words, the number of animals that we're selling. So stocking rate's really, really important. We actually had a student that interned with us the last few years as part of the Dan Scott School for Ranch Management at Montana State, did his project on that last year. And what we looked at is we took our financial data from 2020 and looked at heifer development costs and depreciation, subsequent depreciation based on two different types of heifer development. One was weaning in the feedlot, the other is range developed heifers. And then we also looked at if we range developed the heifers, if we kept the same number of cows but fed more cows hay, what that looked like, or if we reduced the cow numbers so we had the same amount of graze out days as we did before. And if hay was cheap, it was interesting. The cost to produce a weaned calf was similar between all three of those scenarios. As hay got over, because we looked at it kind of as a sensitivity analysis, as hay got over $50, $150 a ton, that feeding scenario started to really increase your cost of calf. One of the things to realize, if you reduce cow numbers, then your fixed costs go up. And so in one scenario on the graze out, if you can follow me here, we're looking at kind of the status quo is developing heifers in the feedlot and grazing as many cows out as we can. Two was developing heifers on range and feeding the portion of cows that they displaced. And so those pastures that those heifers graze were pastures the cows couldn't graze. We assumed we fed those cows hay. The third scenario was we just reduced the cow herd numbers so our stocking rates or grazing days were the same for the cows, but we grazed the heifers out. Okay, when we fed the hay to the cow herd, we increased the variable cost. We fed more fed feed, which increases your cost to calf. But when hay was cheap, it was offset by lower depreciation costs or lower costs to develop replacement heifers. When hay was cheap, they were offset, and so it was the same. As hay got more expensive, it was actually cheaper to reduce the cow herd size, even though their fixed costs per head were higher. Those costs that don't change by the number of animals that you have. So what you pay yourself, what you pay in your for your land, whether that be rent or property taxes or whatever, what you pay for utilities, depreciation on machinery and so on, those things that you're going to have anyways, that fixed cost per calf goes up as you reduce that number. But all the way through all those different hay prices, though, reducing the cow herd size was at least as was the same or better and the cost of calf to produce a weaned calf because of the savings and either in depreciation. We had less heifer development cost. Now you have to, in a systems analysis, you have to take that a step further though and say, if selling calves for me is profitable and profitable enough, I maybe I had to have a more expensive calf but sell more of them. If the value you're receiving for those calves is near break even, you're going to be better off selling fewer that have a lower cost, you know, a higher profit per head. But we really don't want to look at profit per head. We want to look at profit per ranch. And so a person can sit down and make some of those calculations. But it was interesting to me that it did not raise the cost to do that. But, you know, in our system, I mentioned we have a fairly intensive farm and the feedlot operation. And so that adds overheads. And so stocking rate for us at turnover is very, very important. And so we have not made the leap in our system to developing all of those heifers on grass every year and reducing that cow herd size. We've done that opportunistically. We're continuing to evaluate that. But in one thing I can tell you is it's worked really well for us when we've done it. I love it. But maybe, you know, the scenario is saying some of those three-year-old cows that we try to graze out longer, maybe struggle in condition more. Maybe I should allocate some of those hay resources to some of those young cows and start feeding on those a little earlier and then run those replacement heifers out, which pays for that, which ups your overall herd pregnancy rates if you don't have those low breed ups in the young cows. To me, that's a system really worth evaluating. And I know there's been some work at the University of Nebraska with spring calving herds where they've looked at more extensive heifer development. And they've really shown that too, is that the reproduction, even in that spring calving herd, was not markedly affected by running those cows out. So lots of opportunity there and a really important part of our business to focus in on. I do not have a silver bullet recommendation. There are so few of those outside of crossbreeding and rotational grazing in our industry. I can't go out and say in a podcast that, boy, you know, if you're a rancher in Hardin County, you know, South Dakota, that you absolutely should be doing this. And by the way, we did some of that heifer development up by Buffalo when I was there. Robin helped with that research, and those cattle did really well in Hardin County. They were, and that's a fairly tough environment. So it works. You can do it. You just really have to look at it from the whole system perspective. I hope that doesn't complicate it too much, but the decisions we make are not uncomplicated. And I think, you know, we don't want to get caught in the weeds, but we don't want to dummy these things down either.
Thank you, Trey. I think you said it really well, that it really depends on your ranch and the system that you have within your ranch. Are looking at it as a systems versus a linear, you know, like I'm going to calve in May and June because this is what I want to do. I don't want to have all the labor, but there are those unintended consequences with that, for instance. And I really do appreciate what you said. I think there's great opportunity to obviously, like you talked about that research we did in Hardin County a few years back, and there is great opportunity to develop those heifers on grass. I think a lot of people maybe just say we can't do that. And I think that they need to look at their ranch, look at their system, and see if it is a potential opportunity. And if it's not, it's not. But I think we get so wrapped up into the day-to-day activities of the farm and ranch that we don't work on the business all the time. And like you said, looking at the data, analyzing it, and not being, just have to look at the whole thought process and not get caught up at, we have to go fix fence today and that's all we do, or we have to go calve today and that's all we're doing. I mean, those things have to happen, but we also have to work on the business. So
that's Trey, absolutely.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Trey.
Oh, I was just saying that's absolutely right. And I just don't, you know, if I had a word of encouragement for people listening is don't let the complications that are associated with these decisions, all the ramifications, scare you away. And by us saying it may depend somewhat on your ranch, please don't let that prohibit you from evaluating your system, because I think everybody needs to take a real hard look at their strategies and evaluate other opportunities and try some new things. And like we said earlier, if they're not working, you can adjust if you're paying attention.
Well, and one thing that you mentioned that I kind of want to circle back to just a little bit, that I think is hugely important, is in all of those strategies that you talked about and all those scenarios you talked about with those cows and developing those heifers, those were all situations where you guys were minimizing the washout in those two coming three-year-olds. And in addition to that, I think you guys are already perhaps doing a lot of things very well that are not so commonplace within the industry, that maybe I'd love to have you touch a little bit more on, such as crossbreeding. You guys are already doing so many things to put the emphasis on these lowly heritable traits and kind of reproductively challenge these animals to put them in scenarios where that by the time they're even pregnant for the first time, they're going to go on to be successful throughout the duration of their lifetime on the average, you know. And you kind of mentioned some displeasure with the not seeing any differences in the longevity of those cows. And I'm with you there. I would have imagined that you would see some of those more roughed heifers stay a little bit longer, but I think maybe you guys are already doing so much right that it's getting hard to see big differences in the longevity when you guys are doing a lot of fundamental things correctly to challenge the reproductive efficiency of your animals.
Well, there's no question that things like crossbreeding do, you know, they affect live calf wean per cow exposed, you know, pregnancy rates, weaning rates, so on, you know, calf survivability. And so I think that kind of plays into part of the system that we're talking about. And you want to take this, if I haven't talked about interrelationships any further, we talked about our rotational grazing and how fire prone we are in our area and so on and so forth. One of the things that we're doing to accomplish our range management goals and keep heterosis high from crossbreeding is we're using crossbred bulls. And so we've found partners that are producing some of these crossbred bulls that kind of fit our scenario balance and traits that are important to us, which include, you know, a pretty big emphasis on maternal traits to be able to supply those kind of bulls for us. And then you can probably do a better job of maximizing heterosis and more conventional crossbreeding systems. And if you can manage that, I don't discourage that at all. For us, where we may have a unit that burns out with fire, since we don't have breeding groups because we're using these crossbred bulls, we can put and take in different resources in different areas. We're not, you know, we don't have a herd, you know, of one herd is getting bred to one bull and another herd is getting bred to another bull. They're all getting bred to the same crossbred bulls. And we're just trying to be careful in our selection of those to have some breed mix to keep heterosis, keep it up in those cattle. So again, you know, it's all part of the system. And I think we have learned some things, excuse me, but we're still learning. You know, our learning curve is as steep as anybody else's.
And you briefly touched on this a little bit ago, and I'd love to just have you flesh it out a little bit more. Can you tell us just a little bit more about what those heifers are going through as they get ready for their first breeding season? You mentioned that they get bred to those Wagyu bulls. Maybe just talk a little bit more about that, that marketing arrangement and the destination for those calves, and then how you guys maximize on the profitability of those heifers that maybe don't take during that breeding season.
Yeah, good question. So, you know, we've got an arrangement with a company out of Idaho before we breed the heifers to sell them these F1 calves as yearlings, not as calves. So we're 2 years out on that marketing arrangement. So when we breed them, we breed heifers in 2021, they're going to calve in 2022, they're going to be yearlings in the spring of 2023. And so that arrangement's put forth that by doing that, we've got a stable market on those, a value added market which allows us to range calve the heifers. And so there's other genetics you can use to accomplish that. But in this case, we feel like we're working on the marketing side and the cost side simultaneously. Instead of taking away value from those calves that are born from heifers, we've got a value added program. There's different ways you can do that than we are. But that's all kind of thought through before we breed them. And then, you know, the heifers, once, we pregnancy test by ultrasound on a fairly short season, about a 45 day season, in the fall of the year. And those heifers that are open, can be really profitable, yearlings to sell off of grass in the fall, or a lot of times we feed those. That group of animals can be fed. They perform really well off of grass, and their conversions are good. And it's also a way to, if you need to move some income across years. So if you're having a pretty good year this year, you know, next year is going to be a little tougher. Retaining ownership on those animals help you move some income, and it can be very profitable to feed. So it opens up opportunities, and that's what I think we don't want to do in any of our decisions, is shoehorn ourselves into having to take a particular marketing time, a particular marketing scenario. Is to have some diversity in that, and the types of programs we're using and the timing of those programs that allows us to manage these markets. And we also use a lot of a risk protection on them. You know, we use the futures board and manage risk that way. The marketing today is incredibly frustrating in how fast these markets move. When you think about the system that I described to you that we have, where we're weaning lighter weight calves in the fall and selling those as yearlings in March, April, May of the next year. Think about COVID year 2020. What happened to the markets in the spring of that year? They absolutely crashed. Could have been devastating for us, but we had some different marketing programs, some cattle that were slated to go on feed, some that had premiums associated with them, and we had a lot of risk protection on them, and with forward contracts, basis contracts, and futures contracts. And so we didn't feel the pain of that like we might could have. And it's just, don't let marketing, as you're thinking about your system, we love to work on production. Don't let marketing fall to the wayside. It's extremely important.
Excuse me. Thank you, Trey, for joining us today on Cattle HQ. I think we'll be wrapping it up here, but thank you for sharing your insight, your philosophies, your thoughts for everyone listening to our podcast here today. I guess it kind of goes back to, again, like you said, not just focusing on the production, but looking at the marketing, the human aspect of it. We could get into a whole labor thing here if we wanted to, maybe for another podcast. But there's a lot to think about looking at as we've been using the word, a systems approach versus a day-to-day activity thought process. So with that, thank you, Trey. I'm sure Trey is always willing to visit with people. And I know if you maybe even contacted him there at the padlock, he'd probably give you a tour too. So thank you, Trey, again for joining us. And once again, this has been Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest information. Until our next episode, remember, you are not fully dressed until you're wearing a smile.